Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 332. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's your week going, bud?
It's good, man. Just trying to soak in the last little bit of the minor league season. I saw Travis Sikora the other day, so that was fun. He's stellar. Saw some other new draftees. Yeah, man, it's coming to a close real quick. So it's a little bit sad, but at the end of the day, it's another year in the books of minor league baseball, which is just, I just feel like we blinked. I feel like we were in Florida at the beginning of March, and now it's almost September. So it feels like time gets quicker every year. But I'm excited to talk about this topic tonight. We're going outside the minor leagues and looking at some major league players, because there are some major league players that are doing some really good things, and I think they're worth talking about. So I'm pretty amped about that.
Yeah, I figured we'd get back to some major league hitters today, because we've been, I think, entirely prospects the last two episodes. We try to hit on everything here to help y'all out in your leagues. Yeah, it's definitely feels like the end of the season is approaching, because when I walked out to my car to go to work this morning about 7:15, got in my car, and while I was walking to my car, I was like, ooh, it's a little, first time I'd even thought about my sweatshirt in several months. That's kind of hanging in the closet right now, but get in my car and my dashboard had 53 degrees. So
no.
That's the lowest I can recall it being since probably like maybe late May, early June. So yeah, definitely a little cooler in the morning and definitely feels like fall is approaching quickly, but so I got plenty of baseball to be played here. Still a little bit more in the minor leagues, another five or so weeks in the major league season. And as Chris mentioned, we're hitting the major league side today and it'll be entirely hitters. That's just how it turned out with who we put on the outline for today. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, the DynastyDugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com for more work from each of us, including all of our Dynasty and Prospect rankings. And of course, you got to check out all the great things going on over at Rotoballer. Still cranking out a ton of baseball content. Football is in full force. Obviously, football drafts are in full swing. That season starts in a couple of weeks. And if you want to use the code TOOLSHED at checkout, get your 10% off any premium package, baseball, football, whatever you want. Rotoballer's got it over at rotoballer.com. Let's start with a pretty big name. Had a very up and down career so far through his first three seasons, more down than up, but Spencer Torkelson is back and performing pretty well in his first few games back. They went 0-4. It's had two multi-hit games and two hitless games, so take that any way you want. But I'm starting to heat up a little bit in the end of his AAA tenure. But overall, wasn't really hitting well in AAA this season. Strikeout rate was still very high, and that's been an issue for him lately. So in 58 games, so he was sent down in early June, went back to AAA. First game there was June 4th, and he was there for 58 games. Overall, pretty pedestrian, 239, 356, 443 slash line, 13 doubles, 11 home runs, 42 walks to 85 strikeouts. And so 85 strikeouts in 58 games. That is a 30.9% strikeout rate, though the walk rate was pretty solid. With those 42 walks and 275 plate appearances. I don't know, Chris, after seeing him be up and down in AAA, has your thought process changed at all on Torkelson? It looks like he'll get some run here down the stretch with Detroit. Why not? Just to see if he can rekindle some magic from the end of last year where he went, I think he had like 15, 16 home runs in 2 months near the end of last year. Where are you at on Torkelson these days?
It's a good question, and I'm honestly not sure what to do with him at this point. You look under the hood a little bit and things actually look pretty similar in AAA to what they did in the majors. There's still some kind of questionable contact. His contact rates actually went down in AAA, which is a bit surprising to see from where it was in the majors. And he struggled. He showed his low chase rate. Yeah, that's back to where he's been. And it's just pretty consistent with who he's looked like. And I don't know. Can he improve? Yeah, absolutely. We're talking about somebody that hit 31 home runs last year. I think it's too early to completely write him off. But it is interesting to see the dip in not only production, but across the board this year. His average exit velocity has dropped over a mile and a half, actually almost 2.5 miles per hour, which is a little crazy to look at and see. The hard hit rate is down pretty substantially. We just kind of have to wonder, like, is there something underlying that's going on here? So you hope that Torque does bounce back. He did come back the other day and he had a 4-hit game. That was pretty encouraging to see. I think that if you have ever wanted to buy in on Spencer Torkelson, now's the chance. His value is probably cheaper than ever. So it does create a pretty good opportunity to buy in and see where it goes. I'm not the highest on him. I think that there's still a lot of question marks right now. But if you are interested, I think now would be the time to take that shot and see what happens here, because it's not going to cost you much at this point. It shouldn't, at least, because he's frankly been really bad. So I think that the buy opportunity is here for sure.
Yeah, I picked him up in a couple of leagues. Just why not? Like I said, it was low cost. I was able to, one league is, it doesn't have any fab. It's just a daily thing. So I was just picked him up and dropped somebody else. And I got him in I think one or two of my fab leagues. I can't remember which it was. But figured, why not? Low cost. I've never been the biggest on Torque either. I've probably been more a naysayer of Torque over the last year or two. I think there is some value to be had here. I wonder if he settles in the Andrew Vaughn range, where it's like maybe back end corner infield option, depending on your league depth. If you're more of a shallow league and he's a guy's more utility bench guy. But yeah, I don't see him ever becoming an annual starting caliber fantasy first baseman. I don't think he hits for enough average. Maybe he gets to be a 240, 250 guy with 25 home runs or something like that, 25, 30 home runs. I think that's still in the cards, but I just don't see him ever getting to be like a top 10 first baseman or something like that. So yeah, Andrew Vaughn range is where I think he'll wind up long-term. But he's only 24. Metrics under the hood you alluded to, they're not terrible. He's right around league average zone contact, slightly below league average overall contact. The chase rate is actually better than league average, so definitely some decent stats there. So it's terrible, but yeah, I'm just not the biggest on Torque for sure. All right. So while Torque is back, someone had to get sent down, not on the same team, obviously, but one eye for an eye here. We got Nolan Gorman going back down to AAA, Jordan Walker as well, but we're going to focus on Nolan Gorman here. we know the power is there with Nolan Gorman. If anyone's ever watched St. Louis play or just watch highlights, the power's there. Barrel rate has been above 16% each of the last 2 years. You know, hard hit rate is pretty good. Sweet spot percentage is among the best in baseball, you know, upper third in the league in bat speed as well. But outside of that, it's been pretty not good, to put it nicely. In the K rate's been above 30% all three seasons. This year up 37.6%. That ain't going to get it done. Zone contact about 71%. Overall contact around 61%, both among the worst in baseball. The only other person with all three rates like that bad is like Jose Siri is in that range. So Gorman gets sent back down. And Chris, the power's fun, especially from second base. You don't usually get this much power from that position these days. But at this point, like, he's going to need to make massive strides if he ever wants to be a starting caliber first baseman in the major leagues, let alone in fantasy. So I don't know. I used to be pretty high on Gorman in his prospect days, but these metrics are just really worrisome and actually trending the wrong way. The overall contact, zone contact, and K rate have gone the wrong way in each of his last three seasons. So I hate to say I'm fully out, but I'm as close to fully out as you can be.
Yeah, the progression has gotten worse each year. When you are not getting any better, and I know he's 24, but when you're getting worse and worse, it's far from ideal, and that's what's happened with the contact rates. They've turned in the wrong direction. Gorman is hitting more ground balls, less line drives in the process. So like the sweet spot rate, you mentioned it looks good still, but his squared up percentage is the worst in baseball, actually 17%. So he's got the bat speed sitting to ideal angles, but honestly, like the contact quality is not good. The zone and overall contact rates are the worst in baseball. Strikeout rate's the worst in baseball. Pair that with pretty bad defense at second base. We're talking about one of the worst defensive second basemen in the game. What is there to like here? And I think you said it well in the fact that Gorman is going to have to take significant steps forward. We're talking like two grades of contact. I mean, the contact's the worst in baseball. He needs to make substantial improvements to be where he's viable. And then you factor in now the defensive side. I know the Cardinals have had a rough go, but like, why not just put Thomas Sejacy there? There's guys that are certainly more viable to play second base that they have. Brendan Donovan's going to get run there now. And I know they don't have a ton of prospects that are knocking on the door to take that spot from him per se, but Sejacy has been better as of late. He's one that could take that spot at second base. That wouldn't shock me at all if he did. And where does Gorman fit long term? I think that's a question that everybody needs to ask, is how does he fit in this lineup? And I'm not sure it's at second base. First base is locked up with Goldie. I know he's 37. DH, yet to hit a little better to be a DH. Can't slug. He's slugging 400. You can't have a sub 700 OPS as a DH. So I think there's question marks. I think there's a lot of improvement that need to be had with Nolan Gorman at this point. It's hard to keep him on fantasy rosters at this point outside of deeper leagues. Sure, the power's intriguing. There's some upside, but at the end of the day, I really don't love this profile at all.
Yeah, and that's something I've just valued more and more. Every year I put more and more emphasis on just making contact and not striking out. That's why someone asked me about Colin Houck in my Discord. Now he's farther down my rankings. And yeah, obviously he's still 19 and young in low A, but so I'm asking, hey, why are you so low on Colin Houck? I'm like, contact rate, swing, strike rate, and K rate are all terrible right now. So obviously he can turn it around. But yeah, it's harder to have value when you're just not putting the ball in play. And that's the thing with Gorman. Like, Gorman could be a 35 homer bat, 40 homer bat, if he just had close to average contact rates. Like, if you put him up near 70% contact and like upper 70s zone, he's probably hitting 35, 40 home runs this season. But in fact, he struggles against all three pitch types. He has a whiff rate above 42% against both breaking and off speed. There's just so many red flags. There's one green flag and like five or six red flags right now. So
right.
That's the scale's tipping one way. So yeah, not looking to invest in Gorman. I wouldn't even look to buy low personally. If you get him for free, maybe, whatever. But yeah, I'm not like rushing out that, oh, I gotta go buy low on Nolan Gorman. But this next guy is surging, and I think it's maybe finally time that we're seeing the player we hoped this guy could be back when he was a top prospect a few years ago, and that's Gavin Lux with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Look at the overall line this year. It's pretty lackluster, 253, 312, 398. However, over his last 30 games dating back to July 20th, Lux is slashing 367, 432, 684, 10 doubles, and 7 home runs. Do you think this is the start of him maybe finally fulfilling at least somewhat of the potential we thought he could develop into? I mean, he's still only 26, Chris, former first-round pick back in 2016. Man, he was drafted 8 years ago. My word, that's forever ago now. But former top five, top 10 prospect for a lot of people back in, I think, what, 2020 or so. Are you putting any stock into this recent hot streak from Gavin Lux?
Since the All-Star break, Gavin Lux has been more productive than pretty much his last two seasons from like a fantasy perspective. He's hit 7 home runs. He's got 10 doubles over that span. He's hitting 356 with a 421 OBP, a 200 WRC plus is just crazy to look at and see. Is it legit? Maybe it is encouraging to actually see him breaking out. And I think that he's coming into his own. He's still young. He's still 26 years old. I'm not like completely just writing this off as fluky. And I think that under the hood, some things certainly back it. The zone contact rate over the span is near 88%, which is really encouraging. He's still chasing a bit, but honestly, like I look at it and I actually like the aggression here that we've seen with Lux. He's hitting the ball hard. He's got a 12% barrel rate since the All-Star break. He's got a 54% hard hit rate, a 90 mile an hour average EV. Like all those things are up. So maybe it is legit. And while it is at this point just a little over a month, I look at it and think, I don't know. I'm at least interested in investing and seeing where it goes, because he's not all that rostered actually, which is surprising. Like, his roster rates are pretty low, and you know, the chances are that he might still be available in some leagues. And I'm willing to take that shot and just see where it goes. And maybe it's legit. He doesn't even need to be like this good consistently, because the improvements are noticeable. Yeah, it's a high BABIP. He's still striking out a little bit too much. I'm willing to take a shot and see if this breakout continues. And I think it's a good kind of pickup to end the year and then stash him down the stretch. And for 2025, roster him. And maybe it's a really good thing for your team. We'll see. But yeah, this is one of those where fantasy footballers might miss out on. But I'm certainly in. If you're still listening, I think it's worth taking the chance and seeing where Gavin Lux goes.
Yeah, I think it is too. I don't think he's going to, you know, turn into a stud or even fulfill the upside we thought he had 3, 4, or 5 years ago when he was a top prospect. But there's definitely a decent player to be had here. Across the board, he's just pretty decent. Zone contact, overall contact, you're a little bit above league average. Quality of contact is teetering on league average one way or the other. And, you know, 41% hard hit rate. K rate's right around league average as well. So I think, could he be a 15 to 20 homer guy that gives you 5 to 8 steals, 260, 270 average, and maybe like a 330, 340 OBP, kind of something like that? Yeah. And I think maybe that's puts him into the middle or back end of like middle infield options. I don't think he's going to, you know, be a top 10 second baseman or anything like that. But again, maybe a top 15 to 20 second baseman, somewhere in that range. Yeah, I think he can do a little bit of everything. Again, we'll give you a lot of steals, but not a zero there either. He's 4-7-4 each of his last three seasons. So yeah, I think he can do a little bit of everything, and I think there's some legitimacy here too. So I'm buying in at least to some degree, not rushing out to get him, but definitely intrigued about what Gavin Lux has been doing lately. Let's keep it right there in the National League West with one of the hottest hitters in all of baseball. Who would have thought, Chris, let's go back to March. If I told you that since the All-Star, if we were in late August and since the All-Star break, Tyler Fitzgerald would be 6th in the league in WRC plus, what would your answer have been?
Definitely pretty surprised, but he's been good. And I think it's important to remember with Fitzgerald, like, there was some pedigree here actually in the draft, and he wasn't like a 20th rounder or anything. I think he was taken in the fourth round out of Louisville, and he was taken a weird year, like taken in 2019. So then you lose the entire 2020 season, and he showed his moments where he was actually pretty good. In 2021, he hit 19 homers and put up a 837 OPS. In 2022, he hit 21 home runs, and the OPS was down a little bit. But even last year, like, he showed his moments where he hit 22 home runs, he stole 32 bases in the minors, and even played some time in the major league. He's fast. He hits the ball hard. I think that this might actually be a legit profile. He's gone 14 homers and 14 steals in 221 plate appearances, which is just stupid. But he hits the ball at ideal angles. He barrels it up. He doesn't chase often. The speed is legit. So when he has the stolen base opportunities, he hasn't been on first base very often. So there's not been a ton of steal chances just because he's had so many extra base hits so far, which is wild to say, but I'm pretty in here, actually. I didn't think I'd say this at the start of the run. It was like, it was after a week, it was like, okay, like, this is cool. And then you dig in. It's like, okay, sure, there's some whiff. He's striking out a little bit too much, but he's putting enough balls in play to be relevant. And with the angles that he hits the ball at, with his speed, I think that there's value to be had. He's providing value in the field as well. He's just 26 years old. I'm in on Tyler Fitzgerald.
Yeah, I think I would say that I am as well, but I am. It's like you mentioned, there's a lot of good in the profile. And you know, if you want to have a little fun with extrapolation here, if you want to extrapolate out his current stats over 650 plate appearances, he'd have 112 runs, 83 RBI, and 41 home runs and 41 steals. That's pretty damn good. I don't think he's a 307 hitter moving forward. Again, a little bit of a higher K rate, 28.5%. Zone contact and overall contact are about 4 or 5% below league average. Again, not terrible, but just not, you know, doesn't support like a 300 plus average. But even if he's a 260, 270, somewhere in that range, he's got enough power for 20 home runs over a full season. He's got enough speed for, you know, over 20 as well, and maybe even more than that. I don't want to say 25, 25, 30, 30, because that's obviously very rare, but he does have, again, 20 homer power and 20 plus steel wheels to go along with a decent average. And he'll probably hit somewhere and then continue to hit somewhere in the top half of that Giants order long term. So, yeah, I think there's definitely a lot to like here. And it's what we were hoping someone like Zach Gelhoff would be, yeah, with an even better average. Maybe he doesn't have quite the raw power that Gelhoff has, but he's got more speed and better contact skill, much better contact skills than Zach Gelhoff, like not even remotely close. So yeah, you look under the hood, and again, White, maybe he won't be a stud moving forward. There's definitely a lot of fantasy friendly things to like in this profile. So I wouldn't go out and pay a premium for him, but you know, I'm definitely believing that this is a fantasy viable and then maybe even impact fantasy guy moving forward. Next one, I mean, let's keep it right again in the NL West again with Jake McCarthy. It really, I was looking at some of the last 30-day leaders for an article I was working on for FTN, and he popped up near the top of the WRC Plus leaderboard. I forget what the time range was, but I was like, hey, McCarthy's having a much better year than I thought he was having. He's at 8 home runs and 18 steals and 358 plate appearances, slashing 304, 376, 457. It's pretty, a lot of good, a lot of bad in the profile. The bad being quality of contact is not great at all. He's, you know, among the worst in the league in terms of, you know, exit velocity, hard hit, and barrel rate. But he's got a pretty good approach. Doesn't strike out much, doesn't whiff much, and he's a premium runner as well. So if you want to look at him for average and steals, and maybe you get 10 home runs over a full season out of him, I mean, he's at 8 right now. These are the skills that we thought he was going to have when he was a prospect, and maybe it took a little bit longer for him to, for these skills of his to come to fruition, but this is the guy we thought he could be. I'm buying to some degree here, Chris. How about you?
Yeah, I was interested before 2023 and end up being pretty wrong to draft him. There was all that buzz, and he just never really panned. He didn't play enough. He started out slow. I think he got demoted. But yeah, he's bounced back and looked really good. The contact skills are highly impressive at this point. You look and he's not swinging and missing often at all. The overall contact rate sits around like 82%, which is very good. It's above average, if not plus. You look at the percentile ranks and then his zone contact near over 90%. He's cut his chase rate. So that all looks really encouraging to see him make those kind of strides that he needed to make to put the balls in play. He's obviously got the speed. That's a big factor, but he's gotten to more home runs this year than we may have anticipated after he hit just two last year in 312 plate appearances. And he's certainly been one like Gavin Lux where he's been on a tear. And is it going to slow down? Probably. But at what point? Like, we look at it and say, like, when does this kind of slow down? And you look back to the beginning of July, and we're talking about a 341 average, a near 400 OBP, and a 563 slug. Yeah, the BABIP's high, 373. Is that going to come down? Probably. But five home runs and six stolen bases over that span of a month and a half. That's 139 plate appearances. That's really encouraging to see. You look at the StatCast data, and sure, it's not great, but the average EV is up. Like, it's trended in the right direction all year. And over those, since July 1st, we're looking at an 87 mile an hour average EV. And on the season, it's just 85 and a half. So that's certainly been up too. The barrel rate's up. He's at 3.5% overall in the season, and it's at 4.5%. So it shows you that's trending in the right direction. Still not good. Like, we're not going to sit here and I'm not going to try to tell you that's good, but it is encouraging to see the progress that he's made, at least where he's lifting the ball a little more. He's getting to some loft. He's hitting the ball a little bit harder, enough where we can at least look at it and say, all right, there are some encouraging things. And we know that he's going to be one that's going to be able to run. The contact rates have jumped substantially this last month and a half, and that's encouraging. Still high on the year, but I don't know. I think that what he's doing is semi-sustainable. Maybe don't think that you're going to get a ton of home runs out of him. But if you draft Jake McCarthy, if you roster him for 2025, and he gives you 10 home runs and he steals 25 bases and he gives you a serviceable average, I think I'd be pretty happy. Like, I wouldn't complain about those results, depending on the reality is you probably, in if you roster him in a dynasty league, you probably picked him up for free.
Yep. Oh, probably. Especially if it's a 12-team dynasty. He's probably sitting there after the year he had last year. I wonder, this is going to be 2025. I just hope he doesn't let us down again.
Yeah.
You know, it's like building up the same way. Good 2022, fell off in 2023 after his ADP. Do you remember what his ADP was last year? I want to say it was something like top 150, I want to say, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, it was pushing at least like 125, 150.
Yeah, I think so. So I wonder where he's going to go next year. I wonder, is it going to be similar range? Maybe a little bit lower. People are still a little hesitant after what happened last year. But yeah, I guess if you know what you're getting with him, I mean, not a ton of power, good average, decent OBP, and some good stolen base totals, I think you can find some good value in Jake McCarthy. A similar player, but with even less power, but maybe some more speed. We got Xavier Edwards here, who is second in baseball over the last 30 days and steals behind Shohei freaking Ohtani. But 345, 425, 433 slash for Edwards this season and 201 plate appearances, one home run, 21 steals. And even he hit 295 last year in a cup of coffee, 84 plate appearances. I mean, he's among the worst in the league in quality of contact. Though his EVs are at 87 miles an hour, which isn't terrible, but 2.1% barrel rate, 26.4 hard hit rate, but looking at elite approach, 13% walk, 15.5% strikeouts, and pretty good contact rates, 86.7% zone, 84.1% overall, even 68.3% out of zone. He just puts the ball in play and utilizes his speed. 290-plus hitter with 30 to 40 steals over a full season, maybe even more than that, 40 to 50 steals. I think if you're looking for a speed boost, he's a specialized guy, but there's value to be had in these types of players as well. 25 years old, he's going to have all the run in the world down there in Miami because nobody else to really take that spot from him. Yeah, I'm intrigued at least a little bit here.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I think there's formats where in a roto league, the batting average is nice, but you're going to get a big drain in home runs. That's the issue. He steals. That's encouraging. But you look, there's zero hope for power, in my opinion. Max EV of 102.7 is pretty poor. It's a pretty heavy ground ball profile, a slap and dash profile, actually. He doesn't pull the ball at all. There's no lift. I do think that there are some encouraging things, at least, because I do think that in a points league, yeah, I look at this profile and say, all right, it certainly plays. But for some formats, I think that you're probably not getting much out of this other than batting average. And I wonder how much of a drain you can take there. Edwards also, he's pretty poor defensively. And so I understand he's playing short some. You look and he's obviously not great there. But I do wonder, what does the long-term, you know, rotation of this team look like? And how does he fit the picture? So right now, he's been leading off, playing shortstop. That's great. I think that this may be a case where his stock gets really high. And I'm not sure he returns that value in 2025. So he's buzzy. I get that completely. I think there's reasons to be look at Xavier and say, okay, like, you know, this is really encouraging because he's done some really good things. Like you mentioned, he's not chasing. He's making contact. He's putting the ball in play. It's everything you want, but with no impact. It's just, I wonder how much value he actually provides long term. And yeah, I'm a little more hesitant on him, to say the least.
Yeah, he's pretty capped at maybe being a, it's hard, it's very format dependent, but probably like a back end top 200 guy. He's never going to approach top 100, not with his level of power. Yeah, but he gives me some like D Gordon vibes.
See that?
Decent at, maybe, I think D had some 60 steal seasons, so maybe Gordon doesn't get, Edwards doesn't get that high, but it's a guy that gives you, you know, a bunch of speed and some good average and maybe some decent run score total. So that lineup behind him outside of one or two guys is pretty poor right now, but yeah, I don't think D ever had more than, yeah, I'd be surprised if D ever even hit five in a season. I'd have to go back and look. I think his career high might be like three or four, something like that, but yeah, again, format dependent. If you want some speed and some average, Edwards could be a decent little player for you. But yeah, I don't want to expect more than three or four home runs a year out of Edwards, and that's probably best case scenario. But let's talk about one of his teammates here in Jake Berger, who has been doing a similar thing to what he did last year when he's just turning it on in a massive way over the kind of second half of the season. I mean, last year, Berger hit 34 home runs and was one of the better power hitters in all of baseball after he got traded from the White Sox to the Marlins and started off this year. He was one of my favorite third base targets. I completely whiffed on third base this year because my three big targets I was waiting on in redraft, obviously. I was looking at Nolly Marte. I was looking at Jake Berger. And there's one more whose name is escaping me at this point. But all three have just been absolutely terrible this year, though. Again, Berger has been much, much better of late, but you're looking at, you know, as of, let's see, July 11th, he had a 215, 256, 349 slash line. But since then, 323, 396, 756 with 16 home runs in 33 games. Yeah, he still walks not a lot. The walk rate's low. K rate's still a little bit higher. I think there's a lot of legitimacy here. Obviously, he's one of the better power hitters in the game, and he even has some decent contact rates. His contact rates have gotten better this year. He's up to 81% zone, 70% overall. With his power, that'll play. Yeah, the chase rate's high, but again, contact rates are not terrible. And the K rate's even not terrible either. It's 27%, and yeah, it's a little high, but it's better than he was over 30% each of his first 2 years. It's gone down. Last 2 years, he settled in. He's almost Chris Davis, Chris with a K, who was 247 like every year. The last 3 years, Jake Berger, 250, 250, and this year, 249. OBP's a tick over 300 every year, so obviously a little bit lower in that regard. But hey, if he's 250 and 30, 35 home runs, that's a solid corner infielder for you. That's like a Rhys Hoskins profile. Yeah, Berger, it would have been nice for him to do this first half of the year, but maybe he's just a second half hitter, but yeah, like I say, again, contact rates have gone up. I think there's a lot to like here, and I think he's a pretty good corner infielder moving forward.
Yeah, he was pounding the ball on the ground early in the year, and you look at the rolling ground ball rate, And that's where things are encouraging. He was running 15 game spans where he was like 60%+ ground ball, which is just way too high. Like anything over 50 is too high, in my opinion. But recently, like I'm looking at it and he's running like 15 game stretches with like 20% ground ball rates, 30% ground ball rates. And that's encouraging. When I see that rolling trend, when I see him chasing less, the contact has been respectable. Like the zone contact rates have actually been pretty good all year, actually. He's taken a dip a little bit in overall contact at times, and he's hovered like 70%, but the zone contact rates are actually pretty good. And there's no denying his power with Jake Berger. 28 years old, like, I still think there's plenty of good baseball ahead for him. He's got 25 home runs in 437 plate appearances. He had 34 last year in 540 plate appearances. Like, on a per plate appearance basis, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but honestly, I'd guess that he's at the top of like home run per plate appearances, or right up there for sure. So I think that you can buy back in on Berger pretty comfortably, actually. I think that his surge that he's been on, like he's been extremely hot, as you mentioned. And I think that when you look at the game logs, and 25 home runs is awesome, but I think the majority of those since July 1st is 18 in 182 plate appearances. And that's with a near 300 average. That's with a 95 mile an hour average EV. Those are just stupid numbers. And I think he's been even better since the All-Star break. 15 home runs over 135 plate appearances since the All-Star break. And the OPS is just absurd with what he's doing. It's an 1122 OPS since the All-Star break. Those numbers I look at, yeah, that's legit. 57% hard hit, 21% barrel, 95.5 mile an hour average EV. Like, Berger's doing all the things to buy back in on him next year. And if you held him, like if you've had him on the team all year, like you look at the end of the year and the results are still there. I think he's going to end up hitting 30 easily. He may not hit 30. He may hit 35. I don't know. But I think 30 is a pretty shoe-in at this point for a second consecutive year. I think that I'm, pretty encouraged by what he's done and buying back in.
Yeah, I think he's 250, 30, 35 home runs. And that, I actually just pulled it up for home run, at-bats per home run. He's around 16.1. He's right in a similar range as like Rafi Devers, Josh Naylor, Bryce Harper, Giancarlo Stanton, Corey Seager, but some pretty good home run hitters there. But he is 20, if you look at least four, actually, let's kick out some of these lower plate appearance guys. He's probably going to be, delete. Yes, you look at least 400 plate appearances. Berger is 14th in at-bats to home run. Obviously, Aaron Judge, number one. Soto, two. Ohtani, three. Judge is at one home run every 9.49 at-bats.
That's insane.
I think is actually higher. I have to look. I think it's actually a tick higher than his 62 home run season. So, love to see him hit another one today. I think he's at 48, 49 now. Maybe first was 62 again, but
man, yeah, I don't think Berger, we appreciate how good he is.
I know. It's ridiculous. I wish you him and not to get off topic here, but Judge and Soto, I'm trying to think, might be the best like 1-2 punch in one team since, call me a homer, but like David Ortiz and Manny when they were peak like 04, 05. I'm trying to think of, it's probably a duo I'm missing, but just Soto and Judge, two generational potential Hall of Famers right back to back. We'll see if Soto stays in New York, but yeah, that is a really good duo. Rest of the Yankees lineup, not so much lately, but yeah, we don't appreciate Judge enough. But all right, let's close up the show with three catchers, because why not? Let's start with Adrian Del Castillo, 24-year-old rookie bursting onto the scene over the last few weeks. In his first 40 plate appearances, Del Castillo is slashing 361, 425, 667 with three home runs, including a grand slam the other day with his family in attendance, which was pretty cool. And obviously, it's a very small sample size, only 40 plate appearances. He was one of the better hitters in the minor leagues. Before getting caught up, he had 24 home runs and some pretty solid rates as well. You look at about 91 mile an hour EV in AAA, 48% hard hit rate, 11.5% barrel rate, contact rate around 76, 77%. He was the one that we probably all should have been. His metrics are better if you look at, if you combine like contact and quality of contact, than Davison's was. Yeah, Davison hit the ball a little harder, but much better contact skills for Del Castillo. But everyone was going for Davison and still are. But I think I have Del Castillo ranked ahead of Davison De Los Santos now. And I think there's some legitimacy here. He was a former top prospect, former top, I think he was a second round pick, if I recall correctly. I have to go back and look. But in this year, he's been really good all year. Maybe, you know, I'm not a C1 type of guy for fantasy, but two catcher formats, maybe he's a top 15 to 20 catcher. They can hit for a decent average and some pop. Yeah, I think that's very much in the realm of possibilities here for Del Castillo.
Yeah, he's legit. Defensively, I think, yeah, there's some question marks behind the plate for sure. The bat can play. I think it's important to remember with Del Castillo that entering his draft year, 2021, he was talked about as a top 10 pick, a catcher out of Miami. And that catchers don't normally get that kind of buzz, college catchers. And he was among that group, but he had some struggles and fell a little bit. He went 67th overall. I think that the D-backs have something here. He was really good in AAA, put up absurd underlying data, and obviously good results. But the bat is going to play wherever he goes. Can he play first base is the question. He's 5'10". That would be very small at first base. So I think that he's going to have to make it work behind the plate. I think there's some struggles. Like, he's allowed some steals, but I'll go back to the fact that the bat is really good. It's a small sample we're working with, but the barrel rate's been absurd. He hits the ball at ideal angles. He's got good bat speed. And he's made enough contact. The contact wasn't much improved in AAA. It's obviously taken a little hit in the majors because, yeah, it's a big adjustment. But there's decent plate recognition. Good, and he picks up pitches well. The zone contact rate of 76% is good. You know, I think that at the end of the day, I'm thinking that Adrian Del Castillo's bat's going to play at the major leagues. Defense is the question, but yeah, I like the bat a lot.
Yeah, they got a pretty good duo there with him and Gabriel Moreno. So, yeah, I'm definitely buying, at least to some degree, what we're seeing from Del Castillo right now. Now, Chris, who would you rather invest in, Del Castillo or this next guy, Joey Bart, former number two overall pick, never really panned out with the Giants, but in his first year with the Pittsburgh Pirates, he's quietly doing really well in 206 plate appearances, 277, 350, 516 slash line, and 12 home runs. So, and moving forward, would you rather invest in Del Castillo or Joey Bart?
Man, I'm kind of wondering if it's legit with Bart. Everything, you look under the hood and it looks okay. Like, I think, all right, maybe he'll play. And obviously the performance has been like off the charts, and maybe I need to forgive him of his past and hoping that he would be good. He was great in college, and there's a reason that he was picked second overall in 2018. So I think the pedigree has been there in the past. He's still just 27 years old, and you know, this season has obviously turned into one of his best. He's showing some interesting skills. He's still striking out a decent bit, but yeah, I'd be lying to you if I looked at it and said, this is actually semi-interesting. And I kind of wonder, obviously some things have changed a little bit in the profile. He's seen the ball on the ground at a much higher rate than any point in his career. He's making pretty respectable contact. It's passable. It's not great. It's not like standout contact, but it'll play. His own contact rate is the best of his career at this point at near 83%. Chase rate's down at a career best mark. The overall contact rate actually is a career best mark too, and it's still a little lower than I'd like to see, but still, I think that Bart has made some semi-interesting adjustments, and I wonder if it can stick. He's pulling more. That's good. He's hitting the ball hard. Like, the average EV is up. That's pretty encouraging. I don't know. Like, I look at it, and did they unlock something here? Did the Pirates get something with Joey Bart? Maybe, but I'm not, like, fully bought in yet. So who would I rather have? That's tough because, yeah, I think that there's questions about all these guys or both these guys behind the dish, and Bart was supposed to be a very good defensive catcher, but at this rate might trust Adrian Del Castillo a little bit more. Just, I think the bat's better. I'm a little more confident in that.
Yeah, I'm going to lean Del Castillo as well. I'm believing a little bit in Bart. A lot of the metrics are pretty good here. He's got good bat speed and quality of contact is solidly above average, 12.2% barrel, 43.5% hard hits. And K rate's not great, but it's not bad. It's 26%. Walk rate right around league average. So yeah, probably they're going to be in similar ranges. I don't think either are ever top 10, top 12 catchers, top 15, top 18, kind of somewhere in that range. I think it's where they both settle in. Pretty good C2 options and two catcher formats. Yeah, I'm buying into both these guys. But I put up the teen draft. And you just look at the first round. There were the whole draft was actually pretty lackluster. But when you get to the later rounds, like Screwball was in the ninth round, for instance. But we're looking at just the first round of 2018. And not even the comp rounds or anything like that. So just the first 30 picks. There were only two All-Stars so far in there. Alec Bohm, who went 3 overall to Philly, and Logan Gilbert, who went 14 overall to Seattle. That top 10 was Casey Mize, who's been all over the place, both performance and durability. Then Bart, obviously has not panned out until just now. Bohm at 3, Madrigal at 4, didn't pan out. India at 5 has been all right. Jared Kelenic, we all know Jared Kelenic. Ryan Weathers at 7, had more down than up. Carter Stewart at 8, who didn't even sign, and I think is still pitching over in Korea or Japan, somewhere over there. Last time I checked. Kyler Murray, who is currently an NFL quarterback, was taken 9th overall. And then Travis Swaggerty, outfield prospect for Pittsburgh, who never really panned out either. Then you get G-Rod, Logan Gilbert, but then this also had Cole Wynn, Matthew Liberatore, Jordan Adams, Nolan Gorman, Bryce Terang's in there too. Matt McClain was drafted but didn't sign. But yeah, Cassis is in there. He'll probably get an all-star at some point in his career. But yeah, pretty bad first round, especially the top 10 overall. All right, let's close it out with a little bit of Yainer Diaz talk here, who's been one of the better catchers in baseball offensively over the last few months and really having a good season overall. Power's down a little bit. He still got 15 home runs in 476 player appearances, but that's not quite as good as 23 in 377 player appearances. But at the same time, he's hitting 304 right now. Contact rates are actually up. He has an 88% zone contact, 78% overall. That's both around 5.5% improved from last year. He's already pretty solid last year in those regards. Still chases way too much, 41%. That's come down a few percentage points. But when you have those contact rates, you can get by to some degree with that. He's just hitting too many ground balls right now. Ground ball rate's 50%. Fly ball rate's down 10% from last year. So kind of not taking advantage of that ballpark there in Houston. The most of his home runs are to left field. But, yeah, a lot of good across the board. And he'll probably still get right around 20 home runs this year with a 300 average after hitting 282 last year. Yeah, so I've been a Yainer Diaz guy for a while now. And I think he's a top 5 catcher for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think you have to look at him that way. And he started the season like really slow. I think that's worth noting too, is that since the All-Star break, 30 games, he's got 8 home runs. So 8 of those 15 have come in the last 30. He may smash through 20 home runs at this point. And yeah, since the All-Star break too, it's a 360 average and a 617 slug. Like, he's been on fire. 180 WRC plus, that'll certainly play. And the batted, like the plate discipline skills have been really good all year, but have continued just progressed significantly. And the chase rates actually, since the All-Star breaks, down pretty notably. So I think that is worth looking at. And I think that at this point, we have to consider Yainer Diaz like among the elite fantasy catching options, because it's like now we're going on 2 years of sample here of it being really good. Despite a slow start, he's on pace to be better than he was last year. And I think that's encouraging of self that he's been that good. The barrel rate has taken a big jump. It's 13% over those last 30 games, 51% hard hit rate. I look at that and I think, okay, yeah, he's back. He's turned the corner and he's back to who we knew him to be. 92 mile an hour average EV. It's north of where it's been all year. He's on a hot streak right now, and he hasn't shown any signs of slowing down either, which I think is encouraging. He's going to finish the year on the hot note. He is homered in 3 of the last 4 games and went 3 straight games with a homer. And he's going on 6 straight multi-hit games at this point. five straight multi-hit games, which is awesome to see. I look at this kind of streak that he's running right now, and I think that he's pushing his way into the combo of like, all right, who is or who will be the top fantasy catchers in the offseason? I think you have to look at it and say, Yiner Diaz needs to be in consideration here, because it's a thing where no one's like really taken that crown. Like, it's been an interesting year for a lot of the fantasy catchers, I guess. And yeah, William Contreras has been good. Like, Sal Perez has been good, but the age is there. Like, Adley and Will Smith have underperformed a bit. JT Realmuto's fallen off. Yiner Diaz is actually third on the Razzball player rater as far as catchers go, with Contreras and Sal being the only ones ahead of them. And I bet if we filtered that over the last month or two, I wouldn't be surprised. And I'm actually going to go look at that for 5x5 leagues. I wouldn't be shocked if Yiner Diaz is the best catcher for fantasy purposes. And I think that he's flying a bit under the radar. So not flying under the radar per se, but I think that his kind of hot streak has been exceptional. And he hasn't really got enough buzz, in my opinion. Yeah, last 30 days, Diaz is the top catcher in 5x5 leagues. Just that stretch has been absurd. William Contreras is pretty close. And Joey Bart, who we talked about, is actually right there as well. So I think it's an interesting conversation into the offseason. Who is the top fantasy catcher heading into 2025? And I think that Yiner Diaz deserves a little love here in that combo.
Yeah, I think he's definitely entered the top tier. I think there's no question about that. Obviously, Contreras is there. Adley's there. Will Smith, I think he might be like in a tier of his own, because I think he's better than like the next tier of guys like Ohapi and Alvarez and Sal and those types of guys. He's fallen off a little bit. It's maybe back end of tier one, but you look at Diaz is actually the youngest of those four out of William Contreras, Adley Rutschman, Will Smith, and Yiner Diaz. He's about half to a full year younger than both Contreras and Adley, and about 3.5 years younger than Will Smith, who is 29. Yeah, I think if you look at what they've all done, Contreras has been solid this year, in 287, 17 home runs, 80 runs scored, 73 RBI. He's still my C1, and obviously Adley has like that massive pedigree, right? Obviously he was number one overall pick, top prospect, had a higher prospect pedigree than Diaz did, but tell me where Adley's definitively better than Diaz right now. I'll probably still rank Adley, I don't know. And I'm starting to question if I'm going to put Diaz number two. Contreras will be my C1. Diaz might be in that C2. He's okay. They're all about the same age. I'm not going to quibble over half a year. Right. That matters. Maybe between Will Smith, who's 3 years older, sure. You can say there's a little bit of a difference there. This year, Adley's been okay. 262, 325, 421, 18 home runs, 71 RBI, 59 runs scored. I don't know. I think he's been better this year, and he's the same age. Metrics pretty similar, a little bit better for Diaz in some spots. I think it's a toss up between 2-3 between Diaz and Adley, and then I think Will Smith's 4. And Logan Ohapi's charging a little bit too. Maybe Ohapi's in the 5. Francisco Alvarez obviously has the upside, so they're kind of next tier. But yeah, Diaz I think is at least C3 for me, and maybe even C2. He's pretty damn good. All right, that's going to wrap us up, though. Finish it off with three catchers. A lot of fun names here today. A lot of hitters trending in one way or the other. So it was nice to get these guys all discussed. We'll be back with you again on Monday. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day.
Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.